Welcome to the 68th episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Rutherford. Stay tuned for my interview with Leonard Pitts Jr., author of the new novel, Freeman. Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Leonard Pitts Jr., author of the new novel, Freeman. Pitts has been a columnist, a college professor, a radio producer, and a lecturer. He won the 2004 Pulitzer Prize for commentary. Leonard, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Well, first, can I ask you to read the first three or four paragraphs of Freeman?
Sure, happily. His first thought was of her. Outside, something heavy thudded the sky, and the old house shuddered hard as if its floorboards had been stomped upon by giants. He put his book aside and swung down from the bed where he had been resting, fully dressed. Maybe it was thunder. The skies had been leaden all day. But thunder rolls, and this was a percussive boom, such as he had heard many times on the battlefield. This was cannon fire. Then, then over top the cannons came the sound of bells. Every kind of bell there was, fire bells, church bells, school bells, all pealing at the same time in a perfect confusion of joy. And all at once he felt it, hope fluttering in his chest like a butterfly in a cage. It was difficult to breathe. Lifting the old lamp from the stand by his bed, he made his way down the dark hallway, down the stairs, each step taking him deeper into pure bedlam. When he emerged onto the stoop, he found his landlady, the Widow Brewster, standing up among a small knot of people, watching the crowded avenue flow by. Her face, usually so pinched with contempt for him and every other living thing, glowed with beatific light. Tears shone on her cheeks. At the sound of his approach, she turned and, to his great surprise, smiled. If he didn't know better, he'd have thought her beautiful. "It's over," she said, and her voice trembled under the weight of just those two words. She said it again. "It is over."
Great. Well, if listeners haven't heard about Freeman yet, can you describe what the novel is about?
Freeman is a novel about the character that we just met, Sam Freeman, who on the last night of the Civil War makes a momentous decision. He's living in Philadelphia, and he's a former slave, and he decides that he's going to go to Mississippi on foot, which is about 1,000 miles, to travel down there to try to find his wife, whom he has not seen in 15 years since they were both slaves together in a plantation near the Mississippi River.
And how did you approach the research for Freeman? Is this something that you had been thinking about for a while, or what was that process like for you?
Well, the story of what the slaves did right after the war, you know, in the first months and years after the war has been fascinating to me since I first read about it, you know, 20, 30 years ago. This whole idea of sort of trying to reconstruct their families and reconstruct the relationships that have been torn apart by slavery. So in that sense, I've probably been researching it for many years. But, you know, once I decided that I wanted to write this book, there was obviously a much more intensive period of research where I spent, you know, some long hours at the Library of Congress, and I, traveled to Philadelphia to do some interviews and to map out some territory, because the book starts in Philadelphia. And, essentially just a lot of time with my nose buried in old books and old newspapers and talking to people.
Sure. Well, was there information about post-Civil War America that you discovered during the research that you hadn't known before?
I did get a sense of how fragile things really were in that, you know, those first days right after the war. There's a book called called April 1865. I believe the author's name is Winnick, if I recall correctly. And that book was kind of invaluable to me in doing this research, because the argument that he makes is that, you know, even though we're sort of taught that the war ended and things began to knit themselves together, there was actually a great deal of fear, particularly after after Lincoln's assassination, that the whole thing could ignite again, because the South, you know, though Robert E. Lee had surrendered at Appomattox Courthouse, the South was by no means, you know, pacified, or was by no means, agreeable. All of them were not by any means agreeable to the idea that the war was over and that they had lost. And as a matter of fact, it took the South, you could argue, many years to finally accept that verdict.
Sure, Sure. And was it safe for slaves to be traveling, especially in the South and in Mississippi in those days right after the war?
No, it was not safe. It's one of the things that, you know, that I deal with in the book, just how unsettled and how unsafe things were. You're traveling among a population that has been devastated, that has been made poor, you know, just by the privations of war, and that is dealing with a certain amount of bitterness and a certain amount of resentment by the way that things have turned out. And if you are African American and if you are a slave or a former slave, well, you are, you know, your fate was the crux of this war. Slavery was the crux of this war. So, you know, the act of walking down there is not a safe thing to do by any means. For weeks after the surrender, as a matter of fact, there were still Confederate militias and sort of holdouts and dead enders who were still, you know, refused to give up their guns and were still skirmishing against Union forces.
Right. Do you remember how you first got the idea for the novel Freeman?
The idea can probably be traced back to a history book that I read back in the middle 80s called Been in the Storm So Long by Leon F. Litwack, because this is the first book that I've read that sort of deals with this idea of how the slaves, again, struggled to reconstruct their families, this idea of men walking 1,000 miles to find their wives, or people placing advertisements, or of traveling from county to county, or talking to freedmen's bureau officials. I mean, you know, you're talking about a quest that is pretty much hopeless, particularly in those days when the records are poor. There's no computers or anything to track people's movements, and if you're poor, like most of the African Americans were, you're walking about on foot. And yet with those impediments, you know, people, you know, moved mountains trying to find their loved ones. They almost never did. They virtually never did. There were just a few successful reunions. But the fact that they even embarked upon it, the fact that they even tried, just to me was a very poignant story. Spoke volumes about the determination of these people to be family and to reunite and to honor what family means. And it's a story that's never really been told. It's a story that we as Americans don't really know. So I thought it would make, you know, I thought it'd make great fodder for a novel.
Yeah, that's very interesting, as you said, and extremely poignant. You've made your living as a writer. When did you first know that you wanted to be a writer? And what was the process like for you from knowing that you love writing and then actually making a career out of writing?
Oh, I started calling myself a writer and considering myself a writer when I was 5 years old, and started, you know, writing my childish stories, you know, at that time. I started sending things out to newspapers and magazines when I was 12. I got published for the first time when I was 14. That was with a poem in a newspaper, the Los Angeles Sentinel. And then I got published and paid for the first time, which was, really a red-letter day, when I was 18. That was in Soul Magazine, which is it's no longer published, but it was a black entertainment tabloid that was really popular in the 60s and 70s.
Great. Well, you're an essay and newspaper columnist. How does the writing process differ for you when you're writing a novel versus sitting down and writing a column?
Well, in a number of ways. I guess number one is that, you know, with writing a novel, you have a lot more freedom, and reality is what you say it is, as opposed to being constrained by the facts. You have a lot more space to play around with. You know, that's also good. On the downside, though, one of the problems with writing novels as opposed to writing a newspaper column is that you wait a lot longer for any feedback. You know, and one of the things that you're doing as a writer is, you know, waiting to see how people are going to take this, that, and the other. With a newspaper column, it's a matter of a day or two to find out how, you know, what people think of what you've done. With a novel, it's a couple of years. So that's, you know, that really is kind of difficult to deal with.
Sure. And I know that you wrote a column after 9/11 that got a lot of notoriety and a lot of people talked about it and read it. Do you remember any specifics about writing that column, or what the impetus was outside of just your reaction to that day?
That's pretty much all the impetus was my reaction to what happened that day. I'd planned on writing something else. It was my deadline day, and I'd planned on writing something else entirely for that day's column. But once the I sat down at my desk and I turned on the television, I see what's happened in New York City and then what's happening in Washington D.C. I knew that the original subject, there was only one subject in the world that morning. The original subject that I'd planned to write a column about was gone. So I sat down and wrote pretty much just straight out of my gut, about September 11. That column, most columns, the actual physical writing process is probably about a 5-hour process, 5 or 6 hours. That was a 2-hour column. It was just straight to the point and straight from the gut. There was not a lot of fixing that had to be done with that column or a lot of editing or whatever. It pretty much was what it was.
Right. Well, with Freeman, when you wrote Freeman, did you plot the novel before you started writing it, or did you write it organically and kind of see where things went?
More or less organically. There are some high points and some things that I knew from the beginning were going to happen. There are some other things that sort of began to take shape afterward or during the writing process. I like to leave room to sort of be surprised and to discover things along with the characters. I think that, I've tried doing it the other way, and it just never really worked for me. So I like the idea of just sort of knowing a few things are going to happen, but leaving the rest up to chance, or up to the characters.
Right. Well, given your success as a writer, what tips or advice would you offer for aspiring writers and people who would like to be published?
The first thing I tell them is to stop aspiring and start writing. I think that there are a lot of excuses for not writing. People read books about writing, and there's nothing inherently bad about that, except when it becomes an excuse for not writing, or people go to writers' workshops, or talking about writing and studying writing are a whole lot easier than actually writing. And I think at some point, if this is something that you feel like you are meant to do, you need to buckle down, sit down, and actually do it, as opposed to talking about doing it. That's probably the first thing that I preach is to be about the business of actually writing. Studying the craft is very important. It's very fine, but there's no teacher like actually sitting down and writing. That's probably the best advice I can give anybody.
Right. Well, we've talked about your new novel, Freeman, but what novels or nonfiction books have you been reading lately that have stood out for you that you would recommend?
Oh my goodness! I've been proselytizing for Michelle Alexander's book, *The New Jim Crow*, which I think is just an amazing, amazing piece of work. It's about the drug trade or the justice system and the mass incarceration of African American men in the drug trade and sort of the implications of that for our society. And I think that's a very profoundly important book. It's one of those books that if I could put it into everybody's hands, I probably would. Other than that, I just finished reading, actually listening to IQ 84, which is a very interesting novel by Haruki Murakami. I'm looking at the copy or the copy here, and that I found interesting. It's basically it's this fantasy novel, but it's also sort of a meditation on the meaning of reality, I guess, for want of a better expression. So those are probably the two things that I've read most recently that I like. Oh, there was also a book called, I believe it's Americans in London or Citizens of London. It's about the Americans who were in London during the Second World War, which is also pretty fascinating.
Right, right. Well, great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Leonard Pitts Jr., the author of the new novel Freeman. Freeman is available in bookstores now. Leonard, thanks for taking the time to do this interview.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Sure, sure. Thanks for listening to my latest podcast. If you have a chance, please leave a review of the podcast in iTunes. It only takes a moment. Until next time, read some good books and be well.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.